Talk 2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now. Game on, weeknights from 6.
On 2FM. Thanks to you, Laura Fox. It's Friday, the 27th of May, and this is Game On. Coming up today, we're live to Marseille as fans of Leinster and Ronan O'Gara descend for rugby's Champions Cup final.
There's a lot of blood, sweat and tears goes into a campaign to get you back to this point. And even the tournament this year, it's had challenges, if you think, particularly around that Christmas period. You kind of get to this point now, it's just you're just dying for the kickoff, really, and let the players go at it.
In soccer, Fergal Brennan and Alan Cawley set us up for Liverpool versus Real Madrid in the world's biggest club game, the Champions League final.
History will tell us what people say about us because of these kind of games. I'm more than happy and very proud of what we did so far. Pretty special. I will feel better if we win the game, definitely. And that's, in the moment, the only thing I'm concerned about. How can we make sure that that will happen?
Klopp has such a calm, reassuring voice. You know he has it all under control. In Gaelic football, Declan Bogue and Neil Ewing preview a weekend of provincial action. And in racing, Jane Mangan looks ahead to Epsom. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. It is Friday and there is a very busy weekend of sport, as there always seems to be these days. Alan Cawley is with me in studio to talk us through what is going to be going on. Alan, what's your plan?
I wonder where
I'll start.
You need
to actually make a plan.
Oh, well, because of what's going on tomorrow, yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're a lover of all sports. And it's kicking off, I think, with the women's Leinster final. Is that 2 o'clock? And then, obviously, we're into, is it the rugby at 4?
Yeah,
the second Gaelic match is a 5,
yeah.
and then the big one. I'm only joking, no, but you do have to make a plan because it's so, I suppose. And then there's going to be the conversations with husbands and wives all over the country, who's going to get to see them all. But on a day like this, I think all the husbands should be allowed to watch whatever
they
want.
Well, Alan, I'm going to pull you up on that, because there's plenty of wives out there
who
want to be watching all of the sport as well.
Of course.
We're a very equal society now.
Absolutely,
and when we look
yeah.
at attendances, there are quite a lot of women who go to games, and I would like that idea put away, because it okay. always comes out. Oh, the men will have to ask the women now, can they watch the football? Often
okay,
the women
me.
Have to ask the men
that's
as well.
That's me putting my place, okay?
Well,
I'm sorry,
go.
Marie. I'm sorry. Yeah, absolutely. And there is, of course, and it's going to be some day of, with all the matches on, but I'm building up to the Champions League final. That's the only one that I'm, I suppose, 100% interested in. I'll be interested actually to see how Kildare get on against Dublin, to be fair. I know they beat them in the league and everybody is questioning whether Dublin are back. I've spoken to a couple of Dublin lads who, I won't name names, Marie, but who were very much of the opinion that, yeah, they are back. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But it's all about the Champions League for me. It's just going to be absolutely brilliant, I think.
I'm down in Killarney tomorrow for the Munster football final between Limerick and Kerry, and I'll try and get back to Clare then to watch the whatever I can get back to watch, really, depending on how long it takes me to get up the road and all the rest will be.
Well, there's no way you're missing the Champions League final.
No, I'll be back at home in my parents' house for that one.
Yeah, there's no way. A big Liverpool fan like yourself and the lads and all sorts, so I'm sure your house is absolutely buzzing.
It's actually covered in flags and scarves and everything hanging out of the windows, so now people are starting to drive past, so there's obviously people going well, you should call to see that house there on that road. It's got a load of flags. So I was there putting the kids into the car for school this morning, and a taxi driver is doing a loop around. He's beeping the horn saying, come on, Liverpool. And all the lads are hanging out the car window. So we've become a destination house, like one of those Christmas ones, you know, with all the lights. So we are that.
Well, that's what it's all about. And particularly with the boys who obviously love the football, Marie, they're the memories looking back on things like that. I remember games when I was a kid and looking back, and you still remember them all your life, and particularly ones as big as this. And if they follow the team that happens, like every year the Champions League is a big occasion, but if your team happens to be in it, it makes it even more special. And I think, I know we'll discuss it later on, but I think what Liverpool have done so far this season, and even missing out just by pipped at the post, I suppose, last Sunday as well in the league, I think overall they've just been phenomenal.
Yeah, they really have. And you know, when you think of the 30 years that went before the Klopp era, and you look at the kids now who are supporting Liverpool maybe for the last 5 or 6 years, like, they don't know what it's like for all those fans for who spent so long. A lot of memories seem to pop up on social media over the last week or so about the time that they lost to Arsenal on the last day in the league, and it was a long time ago, maybe over 20 years ago, and a lot of Liverpool fans who are close enough to, or at least in their 40s and maybe late 30s now, we're all being reminded of it. And the kids today have no idea what those days are like, because it seems like they just had success when, or success now regularly, where that wasn't the case for such a long time. Anyway, we will get into all of that a little bit later on. We do have a big rugby match this weekend as well. Leinster playing La Rochelle. Keane Tracy, rugby writer with the Irish Independent, is already in Marseille and he joins us now on the line. Keane, by the looks of your social media, it does seem like you're living your best life over there at the moment.
Yeah, we had to dust off the shorts. It's been a while since we've had shorts and sunglasses on. But yeah, it's absolutely beautiful over here. A really nice city. I'd actually never been before and was at the stadium all day today as well, and probably one of the coolest stadiums I've ever been in, actually. It's amazing, real futuristic look to it. And yeah, the Challenge Cup final is on tonight, an all-French affair, kind of leaving the stadium area there. It's absolutely thronged with Toulon fans and Lyon fans. And, you know, I think one of the good things about staging it in Marseille, which is a big, I was listening to you there chatting about football, but Marseille is a football crazy city. Like, you see, like, the Olympic Marseille jerseys absolutely everywhere. But rugby has really taken over here, and it's class, because sometimes, you know yourself, like, when you go to these big finals, like Paris is a good example, actually. The city is so big that the final gets lost within it. London is another one. Whereas you just walk around now, there's like an old port and there's like a square there with loads of bars. And I came over yesterday and full of Leinster fans already, and like fans from all different type of teams. I've seen Munster jerseys, I've seen Exeter jerseys, Toulouse jerseys. So obviously a lot of supporters had bought their tickets already, but it's all making for a really, really good atmosphere, I have to say.
Yeah, it does look absolutely beautiful over there. A kind of place where you could work a holiday in around it if you were forward planning enough to think that your team might get there. But the game itself, so it looks like with every passing day that it's more and more likely to be more competitive. And given the team news today, Keane, it does feel like that the teams might be a little bit closer than people expect.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think the bookies make it 12 points, which to me seems like a lot, particularly for a final. Like, there's no doubt that Leinster are heavy favourites. They're deservedly so with how they've been playing this season. But I think, right, this La Rochelle team off at your peril, out there today in the stadium listening to Ron O'Gara, like, I think they're happy being underdogs. I mean, people are kind of forgetting that. I know it was a different kind of Leinster team that they played last year, but they did beat them in the semi-final. They had their number. And yeah, the team news, like, we've spent so much time in the last few days kind of focusing on Will Skelton. Will he play, will he not? He's just so important to La Rochelle. It'll be interesting to see how long he can actually play, because there's no way he'll be anywhere near match fit. Like, he had a calf injury for the last few weeks. But they're missing Kerr Barlow, their scrum half, but I think Victor Vito being out injured is absolutely massive and could be game changing. He kind of flies under the radar a little bit, but you're talking about two Kiwi World Cup winners taken out of your team. So they have an inexperienced back row has come in place of Trevito. Their scrum half, who's come in instead of Kerr Barlow, is inexperienced. So I think the stars have aligned for Leinster in so many ways, but I think it's now kind of delivering, like, on their potential, because there's no doubt they've underachieved over the last, like, few years. It's been 3 years since they've been in a Heineken Cup final, and when you look at the quality of this team, they really should be kind of, this is exactly where they belong. So I think that with that expectation comes a certain degree of pressure as well. So look, it's perfectly set up. But like I said initially there, I would be very slow to write off La Rochelle.
Yeah, for sure. And you did mention Will Skelton there at the top of that answer, and just how big it is for him to be back, for the team to have him back. What is it exactly that he brings?
Size, Marie. It was so, we got to have a look at the captain's run for La Rochelle earlier on, and honestly, like, it doesn't do it justice when you see these guys on TV and even from a press box or from a stand. But being on pitch level and watching, you know, Will Skelton walking out, Uni Antonio, these are enormous men. So look, he's been a bit of kryptonite for Leinster over the last few years. He was outstanding in the semi-final last year, but even when Saracens beat Leinster in the Heineken Cup final in 2019, Skelton was also outstanding. He's just an enormous man. He's very hard to put down, and he's like, he makes a lot of ground in around the ruck, like, you know, a quick carry. So it's a big task to keep him quiet. I think, you know, Leinster's game plan is going to be all about pace and speed. We've seen that their ruck speed is averaging under 3 seconds, which is ridiculously quick. So it's about moving this heavy La Rochelle team around, because that's, I think, the key to beating them. But one thing that's, you know, we started this conversation about talking about the lovely weather over here, but the temperatures could be 30 degrees by the time the game kicks off tomorrow, which it's that kind of dead heat. I would say it's going to be very, very tough to play in. So I think that's going to be a real test of Leinster's fitness, because, like I said, they do want to play at high tempo. There's talks that there could be water breaks depending on what the temperatures reach on pitch side. So that's definitely something worth factoring in, because there's no doubt that that kind of heat would suit La Rochelle more, simply because they're used to playing it. So it's interesting. Like, the Leinster team did their captain's run today, and I think it was actually in the shade at the time, but there's no guarantee come 5:45 tomorrow that it will be the same, because even the Challenge Cup final tonight is kicking off at 9 p.m. Okay, where it'll be considerably less hot. So you're talking about a pretty warm part of the day, and I think that would be a factor in this game too.
So Ronan O'Gara, he said, he's been out talking to the media, and he said that they've hit their stride at the right time, but he also said that they're a lot more mentally strong than they had been last year, and that they'd worked on that. How big a factor do you think that is going to be? Because clearly they would have had to have learned from last year's final.
Yeah, this is actually their third consecutive final, including the top 14. So they were beaten by Toulouse in the Heineken Cup final last year, as well as the top 14. So it's an incredible job that Ronan O'Gara has done. Like, we've seen it over the years with the French teams. It's very, very difficult to juggle both the top 14 and Europe, simply because the top 14 is still looked at as, you know, the number one priority, and it still is in La Rochelle as well. So for him to be able to juggle that, I think is really, really impressive, because it's not easy to change a culture within a French club, because we've seen so many French clubs over the years, they don't really take the Heineken Cup as seriously as the top 14. So yeah, you're right. I think that past experience will count for a lot, actually. You know, if they keep getting into the finals, it's only a matter of time before they win one. And it's interesting, like, you know, Ronan O'Gara was talking about his own experiences, because it took him three attempts to win his first Heineken Cup, and in his own words, he froze in the first one. We all remember that day against Northampton when he missed the shots at goal. So I think even his own experiences is something that he can put across to his players as well.
Yeah, for sure. And no better man as well to be able to communicate that. So the good news for Leinster earlier today was that Tadhg Furlong and James Loeb are both passed fit for tomorrow's final. And I just think if you're even a passing rugby fan or somebody with no skin in the game, like, knowing that you're going to have two players like that out there, it just adds to it.
Yeah, absolutely. They're two crucial players. One thing I would point out, though, is that James Loeb didn't actually partake in the captain's run today. So that's one to keep an eye on, because usually, you know, you'd have your final run through with the players, but he wasn't togged out. So that could perhaps be one to keep an eye on. Maybe they're hoping to make an even later decision come kickoff tomorrow. But yeah, like, Tadhg Furlong is absolutely massive as well. I think this game, for all the kind of attacking players on show in the back line, and they're both seriously talented, I think this game will be won and lost up front, particularly around the breakdown, and the scrum is massive as well. And, you know, it's great having Tadhg Furlong back, but I think the Leinster scrum has been a bit of an Achilles heel for them in recent games. You know, they've actually conceded 9 scrum penalties in their last two Champions Cup games, which is, that's very worrying, especially considering the power of this La Rochelle front row in particular. Like I mentioned, Uni Antonio earlier, he was outstanding for France in their Grand Slam winning campaign. So I think they have to be wary of that. Wayne Barnes is refereeing it, and he's obviously vastly experienced, but he will definitely have seen that Leinster have a tendency to concede scrum penalties as well. So I think it only takes a little bit of a doubt in a referee's mind, and if he believes that La Rochelle is the more dominant set piece, then that's who he's going to reward. So I think the first scrum will be absolutely crucial in terms of setting the tone, because if Leinster were to concede a penalty there, I think it could be a long, long afternoon for them at the set piece.
Okay, well, give us a score prediction then, Keane.
A score prediction, yeah. Like I said, the bookies make it 12. I'd be surprised if it was that much. Maybe 8 to 10, but I do still think if Leinster play to their ability that they've been playing over the last couple of weeks, like, I think that it's definitely theirs to be won. I mean, you have Johnny Sexton and Keane Healy. If they're to win, they become the tournament's most decorated players on 5 Heineken Cups, which is just crazy, really. Mm-hmm. So I think it's all set up for them. There's a huge Leinster support over here. Plenty of Irish as well. Interesting to see who they're supporting. I heard plenty of Munster fans on my flight over were actually singing for Rog. So split allegiance is there. So yeah, I think it's all set up for Leinster to win Ree. But fingers crossed, it kind of lives up to the expectation. Cause I think it could be a cracker.
Yeah, for sure. Especially because it's in the middle of that, you know, block of sport that we have to sit down and watch tomorrow. That, you know, there's a bit of expectation on them to deliver a good game as well. Now that we've all committed to a day of sitting around and watching it
exactly,
all.
Exactly, yeah. I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to catch a Champions League final as well. It's going to be tricky.
You'll be filing extra early on after the final whistle. Keane Tracy, thanks so much. Enjoy it. Enjoy the trip as well, and keep the pictures coming because it does look amazing over there, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Marie.
RTE 2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. B vitamins equal big benefits. The new Green Farm added benefits range is packed with essential B vitamins. Available in store now.
Welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. I'm still joined in studio by Alan Cawley, and we're going to turn our attention to football now. I'm delighted to say that Fergal Brennan, Merseyside journalist, is with us on the line. We're going to look ahead to tomorrow's Champions League final. Fergal, is there anybody left in Liverpool? Has everybody headed off to Paris?
I'll tell you, there's no beer left in Tesco, that's for sure. I looked out before and the shelves were cleaned out. It's like a party, it's like a carnival, just walking through the city. As you say, if you're a Liverpool fan and you're not in Paris, then you're out enjoying the sunshine and a couple of beers, nice and early, getting warmed up for tomorrow. There's an unbelievable amount of expectation. Yes, Liverpool have been here before a number of times, but it never stops being a huge, huge spectacle for the red half of the city, that is. And they're all set for tomorrow.
Yeah, it does seem like it's going to be crazy over there as well. Lots of people heading over on buses and boats just to go over to Liverpool for the party if they can't get to Paris, or it's too expensive. They're making a weekend trip to Liverpool, and I can see why, because I'd say it'd be great crack. Alan, there's few as excited as you though.
Oh, I can't wait, Marie. I don't even support any of the teams, but I just think the Champions League has almost gone up a level in the past two or three years, but this year has been absolutely phenomenal, the games, particularly the business end. And I always make the when we're having obviously chats about this week in, week out, I always think before Christmas the competition has lost a bit of its edge, because it's those rounds where obviously I think the finances are more important for UEFA, and obviously with more teams and it's better for clubs as well. But I think after Christmas, when we get to the knockout stages or the business end, I always think it just goes up a level, and this year it's been no different. It's been absolutely phenomenal, some of the games that we've seen. And here we have Liverpool and Real Madrid, and obviously Real Madrid, I think, are the story this year because of the amount of comebacks, and just when we thought they were dead and buried, nobody could see a way back for them, not just in one round but in three rounds for memory. I thought they were gone, particularly if you go back to obviously the PSG game, and then obviously Chelsea as well. I felt in that second leg Chelsea were well on top, should have beat them, and then obviously the Man City game as well. So it's just been absolutely phenomenal, the competition so far. And all along I've been mad about Liverpool in terms of how good they've been. They've been phenomenal, as I mentioned at the start of the show, all year. They've been just brilliant in every competition. I'm a huge fan of Klopp and the team and everything about them, and I would have been really, really on their side going into this final had it not been for Real Madrid kind of those comebacks. And that just leaves a little bit of me to think, is their name written on the trophy, Marie? I think Liverpool are a better team. I think they've better players. I think they've even a better manager, despite Ancelotti being so successful everywhere he's been. But because they have Benzema and a couple of wily old foxes in midfield, the likes of Modric, Cruz, Casemiro, and because, as I said, the way they've come back in previous rounds, I just think it could be a special night for them. But I would fancy Liverpool strongly.
Yeah, well, you'd have to think that Klopp will have something up his sleeve as well. And he was asked in the media, does he have any surprises planned? Let's hear from him.
So if I would do now something surprising for my players, for example, then they could admit, then they could think I'm nervous. If I come now, then a rabbit out of the hat or whatever, these kind of things. And I believe when you do the right stuff all the time, then it's the right thing to do in the final as well. But it has to be on the highest level possible. So we obviously played some really, really good stuff this season. We are not here by surprise, or we got a ticket or something like that. We deserved it as well. And so being us on the highest level would be cool. if you could do that. Because then we are really, how sad, then we are really uncomfortable opponent, a real uncomfortable opponent. That's what we have to be. How sad, we can talk about what Real Madrid achieved in the past and this season, how good their players are. We probably could write a book together now about this team, but we are good as well. And that's what we want to show.
Fergal, I love that confidence in just the ability that they have and the fact that they pretty much do the basics and the simple things right. They just do it at a level that's higher than everybody else. And if they can operate at that level, then they probably and deservedly will win. But obviously it's not as easy as just doing that. But when you think of the intensity that Liverpool can get to, and they can reach phenomenal levels, and Alan did mention some of the wily old foxes there that Real Madrid have, will they be able to cope with Liverpool at that level?
They will. I mean, this Real Madrid team is packed with experience, but they, as Alan rightly points out, wily old foxes, particularly in midfield. The crucial thing for me is that if Liverpool do come out and start fast and go hammer and tongs and Real Madrid hold on to them, and we get into the second half, 60, 65 minutes have been played and it's still 0-0, or even if it's 1-0 to Liverpool, Real Madrid have shown against PSG, against Man City, against Chelsea that they won't panic, they won't get flustered. I've just been watching Carlo Ancelotti's press conference and he's the picture of calm, gearing up for the game. They've got so much experience right the way through the team. But I think for me, the difference with Liverpool in comparison to City or Chelsea or PSG is, other than Real Madrid, nobody has been here and done it more than Liverpool. And particularly in this block of the last five or six seasons, Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool have been right there with Real Madrid in terms of finals appearances, obviously beaten Spurs in Madrid in 2019. So that changes things slightly. I do agree with Alan, this idea that Real Madrid won't panic. They only have to play well potentially for 10 minutes of the game to win it and get their hands on the trophy. But Liverpool, I don't think, have that weakness to be pressed on that City and PSG have, certainly in Europe. You're dealing with two teams in PSG and City that are obsessed with winning the Champions League, but they've got no precedent to follow. Real Madrid and Liverpool have tons of precedent to follow. This is a real kind of European royalty clash between them tomorrow night. And I think that will hold Liverpool in really strong stead, because if it is tight in the second half, Liverpool have got enough experience to look around at each other and say, don't panic, Henderson, Van Dijk, etc. Just don't let them lure you into panicking and misplacing a pass or doing something silly and getting picked off. Keep going. And Klopp's mirrored that in his press conference. He backs these players. They've had an incredible season. He doesn't want them to do anything different. Go and do what you normally do and let that win the game. And that bit of confidence could unsettle Ancelotti just a tiny bit.
Alan, what about Benzema? Like, he just seems to be the ultimate disruptor.
He absolutely does. And this year, he shone so brightly for them, obviously. And I don't know, is it coming out of Ronaldo's shadow? And that's what people are suggesting. But he's been absolutely brilliant. And his goals return in the games have been phenomenal. He's kept them in the competition single-handedly, Marie. You could throw in Modric possibly, but certainly Benzema's goals, he's been phenomenal. But I think out of the two managers, and you look at obviously the press conferences, and Klopp sounded kind of very confident there, but also very calm in his approach, because he, as he said himself, they're good. He knows they're good. They're very, very good. And Ancelotti has all the experience in the world. I think he's going for his fourth Champions League. So he's been there, done that. And he's always the picture of calmness, even on the sideline. He's phenomenal, Ancelotti, the way he carries himself. But I think going into the game tomorrow, what I'm so fascinated about, Marie, I think the selection headaches, I think Carlo Ancelotti has more selection headaches than Klopp. He knows his best 11. Obviously, Fabinho and Thiago have been past fit as well, so I expect them to start alongside Henderson in midfield. And then it's the same up front. Diaz will play with Salah and Mane through the middle, and obviously the back four picks itself, I think, with Matip alongside Van Dijk. So that team picks itself more or less for me. But Ancelotti, and I mentioned this a few weeks ago after the semi-final, if he plays, and I also said about the three wily old foxes, he can get away with two of them. I don't think he can get away with three of them. So he'll get away with Casemiro and he'll get away with Modric. If he plays with Cruz, I think that'll be the game over before it even starts, because they'll be overrun and overpowered. And we've even seen that in some of the games already. So I think it's so important that he starts Camavinga, and I'm interested to see someone who's obviously so experienced Ancelotti in being there and done that in what he'll do, because I think he should start him. He has to, just for his energy and his legs and his talent and his ability. And then the other one for me, will he play Carvajal right back or will he play Vasquez? Because we've all seen how Diaz is. Vasquez, I think, will be better shaped to deal with him because of his pace. Carvajal, I think he can be got at, he can be exposed, and we've seen how good Diaz is. He's phenomenal, so he is. So they're the two things for me that I'd be looking out for at 7:10 tomorrow. I think Liverpool's team will pick itself, but that's what I'm so interested to see. Will he go with the three of them in midfield? And if he does, I think Liverpool will beat them.
Fergal, will it be Mane's last game?
No, I don't think so. I think the way that he's built up, I think he has to come if it was a special announcement or exactly what phrasing he used when he said that he'd give a bit of an update after the Champions League final. I just think the way that he's carrying himself, if you're announcing that you're going to leave, that's an unusual choice of words. And he did an interview with Jamie Carragher in, I think it's in the Telegraph, that Carragher has a column in, and basically said that he turned down Manchester United. He was that convinced by Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool. He wants to win more titles. I'd be very, very surprised, particularly the framing of that he's done it in. And if they win tomorrow night, I'd be massively shocked if he essentially says, hey, listen, we hold on to the trophy for a second. I need to announce that I'm leaving. I could be completely wrong, but I think as it stands, no. I think he'll be staying. Beyond next season, I don't know. But for next season, I'd be pretty confident him and Salah will both still be there.
There'll be no pressure on them then to do something in next season then, if they're going to be going after that.
Why would you leave Liverpool, Marie?
Money?
But they've all the money in the world as it is.
Well, he doesn't seem like he's that motivated by money, so... Man,
exactly. Why would you leave it? It's like we're outlining here how brilliant they are all year. You look at the team, the manager, everything about them. The fans adore them. Why would you go elsewhere? That always amazes me, even the speculation around it. Why would you even want the speculation? Why would you not come out and say, I love this team, the fans love me, I'm a huge cog in this team, I want to stay here for as long as I can stay here?
Yeah, well, that's what I'd be doing. But Fergal, what is it, do you think?
It's potentially a new challenge, but I don't think, as Alan said, that plays a major role, same as money, maybe doesn't necessarily. I think the situation with Salah and Mane is different. I think with Salah, it's more about the wages on par with where he believes himself to be in the Premier League ranking and in the European ranking. Can't remember exactly, but I think he's somewhere between 10th and 20th of the most highest paid player in the Premier League. And it's not necessarily about money in the bank, is about a wage that reflects his position in the Premier League and his position in world football. I don't think there's as much detail about exactly what's on Mane's mind, but I think particularly in the last 12 months we've seen Sadio Mane grow into what a lot of Liverpool fans would call Liverpool's main man. When Liverpool have needed an important goal or a performance, it's actually been him more than Salah, and I think maybe that's now starting to play a role. He wants to be recognised as the main man or one of the main men for Liverpool in the Premier League, etc. So I think that's what it comes down to. Money is a factor, but it's not necessarily a demanding of a certain amount of money. It's a demand of a wage that reflects their level at Liverpool and in the wider footballing world.
So it's ego?
Kind of, yeah. Roughly speaking, yeah, but it's a wage to reflect where they are. And you know, we could go through dozens of examples, particularly in the Premier League, of wages, huge wages being spent on bang average players. And if you look at it like that, Mane and Salah do have a case. It's not about quibbling over the amount of money that they're getting. It's about the knowledge of what other players are getting, particularly at other clubs, and that not being backed up by incredible season after incredible season for them too. I'm not, you know, coming on to say get them a pay rise. You know, they earn much, much more than I do. But I think that is the big part of why they're pushing for a change in contract.
And I think you're right as well, Fergal, about the new challenge, because we look at football and we're fans and we love it and we enjoy it, and you know, we see associations with clubs and we think, why would you not want to leave? But for a lot of footballers, it's just a job, and maybe they do want a new challenge. They do want to move to somewhere else and see how they get on. It might not necessarily mean to them what we think it means to them, that it could just be what they do for a living, and it's simple as that.
Yeah, I played with a few lads like that, and even that amazed me. I used to come in the morning and say, did you watch the match last night? And one in particular, one of the most high profile players in the League of Ireland, capped by his country, that'll narrow it down, had no interest in football. And I used to sit beside him in the dressing room, and I used to look every day, and I'd be coming in, did you see the match last night? And he'd be looking at me as much as say, match? What match?
Yeah, no, there are interest. People, there, I've interviewed a few rugby players like that as well, who they just wouldn't watch games unless they had to do it for their job, and that's what it was. And if they weren't good at rugby or whatever the sport was, they'd be doing something else. They could be working in a bank, or just happened that what they were good at was sports. Doesn't mean that they absolutely loved it.
And I get Fergal's point, to be fair. Like, if anyone deserves to be well paid, it's Mane and Salah, how good they've been. They're phenomenal, and we know kind of the inflation across wages across the board and in the Premier League, and there is a lot of average players getting huge money. But I just think the bigger picture stuff, if you were to look at Liverpool, you're going out tomorrow in a final this season, you're competing on four fronts. Surely that outweighs an extra 50 grand or 75 grand to be seen as, oh, I'm on a par with Kevin De Bruyne or wherever. This should be anyway. I don't think that should be an argument. But, like, surely that stuff outweighs that, in my opinion.
OK, let's get back to the game. Fergal, give us a score prediction.
I know I upset you both last week by saying that City would edge out Liverpool in the title race, but I'm actually going for Liverpool this time round. I think they'll go full throttle from the start. I think Real Madrid will hold them off. They might get a goal, but I think Real Madrid will claw themselves back into it, and it'll be a bit of a chess match. But I do honestly think that those situations that Real Madrid, those traps that they set for City and Chelsea and PSG, Liverpool won't fall into it. I think it could well go to extra time, but I think Liverpool have got the endurance, they've got the nous, they've got the experience, and they've got the calmness with Klopp and with the players, that the tricks and the wily old dogs, or the wily old foxes, as Alan said, that Real Madrid have got will give them a big challenge. But it just seems to be Liverpool's. And I think fast forward into Sunday for the parade in Liverpool, if it's the FA Cup and the EFL Cup, it won't nearly be as special. You get the sensation that they want that big trophy dangling off the front of the bus on Sunday afternoon, and I think they'll get it.
Okay, Alan?
I can't look past Liverpool, but I'm expecting, as I say, I've no favourites really in terms of, I don't support any of the teams. I just want the brilliant game to kind of go along with what we've seen so far, and I think we'll get that. I think there could be goals in it, it could be exciting, but it's hard to look past Liverpool. I'm going to go for Liverpool, and I think they've been phenomenal. It'll top off the whole year, because any team that starts out at the start of a year, Marie, and if you were to look at your schedule and someone was to say you'll play every single match on that schedule, you'd laugh at them, and that's what they've done, and deserve to go on and win the tournament tomorrow.
Okay, Fergal, thank you so much for joining us. Alan, do stay with us. We'll be chatting League of Ireland towards the end of the show. We're going to take a very quick break now, though, and we'll be back with Gaelic Games.
RTE
2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's newest chicken and turkey range is full of B vitamins, which play a vital role in maintaining good health and well-being. Available in store now.
Welcome back. It's now time to turn our attention to Gaelic Games. It's a crazy weekend, really, of Gaelic football, with four provincial finals taking place. And to talk us through the action, I'm delighted to say that journalist Declan Bogue is with us, and former Sligo player Neil Ewing as well. Declan, to you first, because we are going to start with the Ulster final and the battle between Donegal and Derry in Clonus. Derry have been so impressive this championship so far, and we've seen quite a lot of them, though. Do you think that Rory Gallagher is holding something back? Does he have an ace up his sleeve tactically, kickouts wise, something that we haven't seen before that we might see on Sunday?
Good point, and you're probably right to start with the Ulster final, because essentially it's the only football final that really counts anymore. although I expect Galway and Roscommon to be extremely tight. But I mean, it's one of those things that Dara O'Shea said during the week in the Irish Times, like, you know, you're hoping and praying for a provincial final in Leinster actually come within the 6-point handicap. I mean, that doesn't make it competitive in any sense. But when you look at Clonus, those two games, Derry Tyrone and Derry Monaghan, were played in grounds that can be said to be sort of claustrophobic in some ways. And, you know, when the kickout wasn't going for them, it really kind of collapsed on them. The other thing to look at was just how far ahead that Derry got themselves ahead of Monaghan. And people can say, well, Monaghan got themselves rejigged and reworked for the second half. And all that's true. But really, essentially, Derry weren't taking any chances. They weren't deciding to try and get a wee short kick out to maybe somebody running around the D at an angle or try and do something over the top. They were just trying to play it safe at that point, and that meant belting it into the areas where they had at least some kind of chance of going for a break ball. But my prediction is that Derry will not do at all as badly on their own kick out as people feel. And also, you know, they'll have ways and means of getting around what Donegal are going to do on them too.
Right, well, Neil Ewing is with us here as well. Neil, the narrative really is that Donegal are going to mirror what Derry have been doing. Do you think that that's going to be the case?
Oh, Marie, to be honest with you, it could be a strange analogy to make, but you know, thinking about this game, it actually reminds me to a game, reminds me of a game 10 years ago where Donegal played Cork in an All-Ireland semi-final. And I think Donegal, to an extent, have kind of morphed into that Cork team where they can kind of physically dominate a team, nearly beat them by grinding them down into submission. And Derry are this, I suppose, exciting team that are just starting to come, but you know, to play that counter-attacking brand of football. So I think there's probably two different styles at play Sunday. I think Donegal are very impressive the last day and the last 2 days around midfield. You know, Hugh McFadden, a huge physical presence there, and Jason McGee, very dominant. So I think, as Declan mentioned, Derry under kickouts have obviously struggled a little bit, but forewarned is forearmed. And I think that's the fact that Derry have struggled, the fact they're coming up against such a powerful midfield pairing, that they're probably going to throw something different at Donegal that they haven't been expecting. And no better man than Rory Gallagher, who has great insight on the Donegal players, to come up with what he feels may exploit their weaknesses.
Yeah, for sure. And we know as well, Declan, that Rory Gallagher is a real stickler for detail. What do you think are going to be the key matchups for him on Sunday?
Well, I mean, you know, even aside from the matchups, right, it's the knowledge of the players, it's how he kind of equips them with all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I remember the quote before the Ulster final in 2018 when he was bringing Fermanagh there, was that he had maybe trained, say, Frank McGlynn, Michael Murphy, Ryan McHugh, but Patrick McVerity, all these guys about 800 times. And if you look at it, all the Jamie Brennan, Jason McGee, Michael Langan, he handed all those boys their debuts. Like, they all came through Rory Gallagher's coaching, so he knows exactly what they are and what they're about. When you look at matchups, right, so he's going to say, well, where are Donegal strong and how can you make them vulnerable? I honestly believe that he's going to do something like put Conor Glass on to Michael Murphy. And I think if Donegal might say, well, you know, Michael Murphy could head into full forward and occupy Conor Glass, and Derry are losing an awful lot of physical size in around the middle, well, I wouldn't be so sure, because I just think that Michael Murphy's natural inclination is to go out around the middle now. I don't think that he sees himself in any way as a full forward. Apart from that, you're looking at Chrissy McCaig on Paddy McBurdy, same as last year. And essentially, McBurdy scored 2 points, I think, in that game. But obviously, everyone is always going to remember the last second or the second last play of the game when he got away from McCaig on the loop, kicked it over. After that, you're looking at Hugh McFadden and Michael Langan. So you're going to have Jason McGee, Murphy, Langan, and McFadden right across the middle for the kickouts. They're going to have to pair them up. They're going to go with, perhaps they're going to bring in Doherty again, if he can start. Patrick Cassidy would be a big help in terms of size. But, you know, that's what I think Glass on Murphy is going to be it's going to be like two prize bulls against each other.
I'd actually love to see that. I'm going to it on Sunday, so that would be compelling viewing for sure. Give us a prediction, Declan.
I think Donegal 1-17, Derry 1-15. I can't see Derry getting to that 20-point mark that they kind of determine as the golden figure to get to. I just can't see them getting there. And I can't see Donegal completely shooting the lights out. But then, you know, these games of football, they take on a life of their own. Like, if Donegal were playing Tyrone last year, and if Michael Murphy's penalty had have actually went into the net, I think there would have been no red card. I think Donegal would have beaten Tyrone. I don't think Tyrone would have been having the kind of year they had whatsoever. I think that their season nearly turned on that missed penalty. I think that the subsequent sort of hack that Michael Murphy made at the ball, a loose ball, and caught Kieran McGeary, that just sunk their whole season. I think that was just a man frustrated after the hamstring injury, not quite fit to get back to bend and get into that ball, and it kind of sunk Donegal altogether. So that's the thing. Donegal 117, Derry 115.
Hey Declan, thanks so much for joining us. I know you have somewhere else to be, so I will let you go, and sure, might see you in Clonus on Sunday. Talk to you soon. Neil, let's move on to the Leinster final, Dublin and Kildare. Declan made the point that we're all kind of hoping and wishing really for it to be a contest. We know that Kildare are definitely a team that are going in the right direction, and Dublin seem to be actually also going back in the right direction that they need to be as well. But are Dublin too far ahead, do you think, for Kildare to challenge them?
I think you used the key word there, Marie, you know, hoping for a game or hoping for a contest. And I think a lot of that hope that we have probably goes back to the league result earlier this year. You know, the fact that Kildare have already beaten Dublin in what was a pretty important game at the time for both sides, relegation-wise. I think it's a very interesting game. I think Jack O'Connor over Kildare last year went up to the Leinster final and probably set Kildare up a little bit defensively to stay in the game. New management team in this year, you know, I suppose the Kildare supporters will have their ideals and how they'd like to see the game played. But I think it'll be a little bit naive of Kildare to go up and go too gung-ho against Dublin too early on. I think it's important that Kildare stay in the game early doors. You know, don't concede any goal. Don't give Dublin that oxygen. Don't give the Hill that oxygen. You know, that they can erase those doubts that emerged during the league. I think the longer Kildare stay in the game or in touch and difference, those seeds of doubt from the league are going to start to spurt a little bit. So I think, you know, that's just a little thing for Kildare to watch out for. But yeah, Dublin, you know, the last two championship games they've played, they've won them. They've probably won them in the first half. So definitely getting back to the form that had them as All-Ireland champions over the last few years. But how close to All-Ireland champion form, I suppose we really don't know. So going to be a good test against Kildare. I think Tom Leahy has really kind of emerged in the last few games as probably the long-term partner for Brian Fenton midfield. He's given them a decent platform. You know, they're going to have a great battle with Kevin Feely and Kevin O'Callaghan midfield for Kildare. You know, I think if Kildare can start to get on top there, McCormick in the half-forward line for Kildare is absolutely flying it. If Kildare on top, get him on the ball, it's going to, Dublin like to play with that, I suppose, artificial plus one, for want of a better word, where their centre-half back can drop off. But if McCormick is getting on a lot of ball further out the pitch, he's not going to be able to do that. That's going to free up Daniel Flynn, Jimmy Hyland inside. So I think that midfield battle is going to be absolutely crucial in this Leinster final.
Okay, so what about the Connacht final going, Roscommon? It does feel like it's a tricky one to call.
Yeah, I know Declan mentioned that Ulster was maybe the one remaining provincial final of note, but I think everyone in Connacht, everybody in Galway and Roscommon would say differently. This is, yeah, an intriguing battle. I think probably Roscommon will be happy that they're playing Galway, not Mayo. They've struggled with Mayo over the last few years, but they have absolutely no fear when it comes to taking on Galway. No fear going up to Pearse Stadium for a Connacht final. Their record there in recent years is absolutely excellent. For Galway, you know, I think probably the way the last few games have panned out for them is probably leaving them in an ideal position. You know, they played Roscommon the last round of the league in a meaningless game for Galway. They were beaten, you know, a lot of changes in the team. They wouldn't have read into that. Then they played Roscommon in the league final in Croke Park. And, you know, I think they were good for a lot of that game, but they were just caught down the home stretch. I think they were caught down the home stretch. Probably, you know, push Pádraig Joyce and Keane O'Neill into a slightly different setup, slightly more defensive setup for the Mayo game. And I think that was the way they had to go if they wanted to beat Mayo. You know, they played double sweepers. You know, it worked excellently for a large portion of the game against Mayo. So they'll take great confidence from that. But not only that, I think they were nearly caught down the home stretch. And, you know, a really good management team. They're not going to get too carried away with the results. And they're going to analyse that last 10-15 minutes where they struggled against Mayo and you know, learn a lot from that they can bring into this Roscommon game. So, unfortunately for Roscommon, I think since the league final, they've played Sligo down to 14 men after maybe 10 minutes of that game. Horrible conditions in Markovitch Park that night. You know, they won't have learned a lot about themselves. So, I think since that league final, while Roscommon came out on top that day, Galway have probably just learned a lot more over the last month, the last 6 weeks. And, you know, it just gives them a little fancy going into the game against Roscommon Sunday.
What about Limerick and Kerry? Can you see anything bar the obvious?
I'd love to say I could, and you know, it's no slight or no shame on Limerick. I don't think they're going to beat Kerry on Saturday, but I think there's only three or four teams in the country that can. So for Limerick, it's probably not going to be an outcome focus. They're going to have their own goals heading into this game, and you know, they've had a great year so far. Morris Horan will have a lot of knowledge on Kerry. I know he was involved with Mayo teams over the years. Billy Lee, very shrewd. You know, there's a border there, so they'll have, you know, an intimate knowledge of what Kerry are going to bring to the table. Stopping them is probably a different story. What Limerick do have is athletes, so I will be hopeful that they can stay in the game. We've seen Cork stayed in the game for probably 55 minutes or so. Then I suppose the combination of the work they had to put in to stay with Kerry for that long and the subs that Kerry were able to bring in off the bench probably told in the end. For Kerry, it's hard to know, like, you know, are they polishing a diamond the last few weeks in the Munster Championship and, you know, coming out easily on these games, or is it blunting, you know, that really sharp knife that they had shown during the league? That's the interesting thing for Kerry. I think then Kerry are going to be looking at the internal competition within the squad, and you know, there's probably fellas playing for jerseys, even playing for places to come in off the bench, and how Jack O'Connor manages those lads, you know, in terms of their game time, you know, even who he brings on. I'm sure there's lads that'll probably even be getting put out if they're fourth on rather than second on. So, you know, that competition in the Kerry squad has to be very strong. So I think for Kerry, it's where lads leave themselves in the pecking order going into an All-Ireland quarterfinal. For Limerick, strong showing, stay in the game for a long time, go into the qualifiers, still with some of that momentum from the league campaign. And I think the fact that probably the four best teams in the qualifiers, or four of the best five teams that will be in the qualifiers, have already drawn each other. You know, there's going to be two knocked out, so there is going to be opportunities there. Kerry aren't going to fear if they're drawn against, you know, the winner of Cork Loud or the winner of Clare, or sorry, Limerick aren't going to fear playing Cork or Loud or Clare or Meath. So I think important to maintain that momentum and have a right shot at the next game.
Yeah, it really is. And those qualifiers are nearly more mouthwatering than the games that we have this weekend. But we will be chatting about them over the coming weeks. Neil Ewing, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break now, and then Alan's going to talk us through the League of Ireland.
RTE 2FM. Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new added benefits range is enriched with all your B vitamins, which are essential for your health and well-being. Available in store now.
Now, plenty of interesting fixtures in the League of Ireland tonight as well, but the eye is drawn to Shamrock Rovers and Shelburne, Alan, just because Shelburne are on that really good run of form, four in the bounce, and I just have a feeling that they could go over to Tala tonight and pull off a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, I would go along with that, Marie, because the momentum that they're bringing into this fixture, four wins on the bounce, is usually going for their fifth. Shamrock Rovers coming off the back of a surprise defeat to Drogheda on Monday night as well, so they'll be looking for a reaction. But the whole Damien Duff factor as well, and I think it's brilliant to see, like I said at the start of the year, Marie, about the stature of Damien Duff, for him to be in our league, I think is absolutely unbelievable. They, of course, they had a slow start, but I always felt they were a work in progress because of the turnover of players, and that they would get better as the season goes on. And here we are now, four wins on the bounce, going over to take on the champions, looking for their fifth. And unfortunately, I'm working, well, not unfortunately, I'm happy to be working at UCs like Rovers, but if I wasn't, that's where I'd be going to Tala, because I think that could be a cracker tonight.
Yeah, I think so as well. Dundalk St. Pat's is another one as well, though.
Yeah, and Dundalk are creeping up the table as well. Stevie O'Donnell has done an absolutely amazing job, of course, going up against his former team tonight as well. And they had a good win on Monday, St. Patrick's Athletic, but they've been very inconsistent, like so many of the other teams, Bohemians, Sligo Rovers as well. But Dundalk have been ticking along nicely, Marie. And if they were to get a victory tonight, they could possibly overtake Derry as well. So